It's a privilege to be here today, passing on to you not only the teachings of my great teacher, Shunryu Suzuki Roshi, but by passing on the meaning of his teaching, giving meaning to the practice of all of the great Buddhist ancestors, all the way back to Shakyamuni Buddha. When the famous Chinese Zen master Unman was ill, someone asked, "How are you?" And he answered, "Sun-faced Buddha and moon-faced Buddha," which means sometimes I'm sun-faced Buddha and sometimes I'm moon-faced Buddha. So sometimes I'm good and sometimes I'm bad, but I'm always Buddha. This is life of form is form and emptiness is emptiness, which is the life of non-duality. And that means there's no problem. Just to continue with our practice is our purpose. When we do anything, just to do it should be our purpose. And in this way, true emptiness or calmness can be realized. And I just want to pause and unpack that for just a second. If your purpose is to just do the thing you're doing and keep on doing the thing you're doing, then whatever happens, you just keep on doing the thing you're doing. So if you've decided you're going to practice Zazen as your practice, you practice Zazen, and it doesn't matter if you have a whole period where all you did was think, or you have a whole period where everything went perfectly. It doesn't matter because you're going to sit the next period anyway. Because you're just practicing Zazen. You're not trying to be this or that or never have a thought or have your perfect posture at all times, or none of that is a measure of who you are when you're doing Zazen. You're just practicing Zazen. So this idea of continuous practice is an enormous problem solver. You just don't concern yourself. Well, you know, I'm moon-faced Buddha then. And so that's who I am today, moon-faced Buddha. It doesn't rock you. And today's talk, which is about sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha, and also calmness or equanimity and bowing, all of those turn out to be the same thing. So to begin, I'd like to read you the last of the newly found Suzuki Roshi talks, which is on calmness, and it's short. It's shorter than the others. So this is Suzuki Roshi in his kind of Japanese English. In Zen poem, it says, "After the wind stops, I see the flower falling. Because of the singing bird, I found the mountain calmer. When something happens in the realm of calmness, we find calmness. Before anything happens to the calmness, we do not feel the calmness." In Japanese saying, it says, "For the moon, there is cloud. For the flower, we have wind." Actually, usually it means the evanescence of life, which we find it very difficult to live in. But in evanescence of life, we can find the joy of eternal life. So what he's saying, that normally we're finding the evanescence of life difficult, but it's possible within that to find eternal life. When you see the moon covered by a cloud, a part of it is covered by a cloud, or that a part of it is covered by a cloud, you will find the roundness of the moon. If you, when you see the moon, clear the moon without any cloud or anything like trees or some weed, you do not feel the moon so round as when you see it through something. It's actually a very profound point. When you sit, you do not feel anything, you just sit. You were in the complete calmness of your mind. But in everyday life, you will find you will be encouraged by the calmness of Zazen. So actually the value of, actually then he corrects himself, actually you will find the value of Zen in everyday life rather than when you sit. Even though you find the value of Zen in everyday life, we should not neglect Zazen. He laughs. But even though you do not feel anything, when you sit, if you do not have the experience of Zen, you cannot find anything. You just find weeds or trees or clouds. Weed without moon means nothing. That's just weed. That is why you're always complaining about something. He means, we need a balance. We need, flowers need the wind to make them alive. And alone, things are not as powerful than against something. For Zen students, weed, which people do not care for so much, is a treasure. In this way, we have art, we have an artistic life. Whatever you do, that is the art of life for Zen students. So for Zen students, whatever you do is the art of life. So when you practice Zazen, you should not try to attain something. You should just sit in the complete calmness. You should not rely on something. Your body should be straight and your spine should be straight, without leaning over or leaning against something or lying against something. You should just keep your body straight. It means you do not rely on anything. You just sit. In this way, physically and mentally, you will obtain the complete calmness. When you rely on something or when you try to do something in Zazen, it's dualistic. That is not complete calmness. This is very valuable experience, and this experience will encourage your effort in your everyday life. This, meaning Zazen, is a very valuable experience. In our everyday life, we usually try to do something or try to change something into some other thing, or you try to attain something. But try to attain something is already the art of expression of our true nature. Try to change something into some other kind of thing is already the art of life. We should find out the meaning of our effort itself before we attain something. So Dogen, the Zen master Dogen, says, we should obtain the enlightenment before we attain enlightenment. Before we attain enlightenment, we should obtain it. When you try to do something itself, it is enlightenment. It is expression of our true nature. It is not after attaining enlightenment that we find the true meaning of enlightenment. When we are in difficulty, there we have enlightenment. When we are in distress, there we have enlightenment. So he says, before we attain enlightenment, we should obtain enlightenment. When we are in defilement, we should attain the composure. He says, we should have the composure. In the defilement, the composure will be experienced only in our defilement. This point is very, very important. By continuing this kind of effort, you can improve yourself. Even though it is little by little, you can improve yourself. But if you just try to attain something or to make some contrivance to acquire something, you cannot work on it properly because you have no art or technique. You lost yourself in your effort. That is why you cannot achieve anything and you just suffer in your difficulties. But if you find out, if you do it in appropriate way, based on your inmost nature, whatever you do, even though it is not perfect, but you can achieve it little by little, you can make some progress. So Dogen Zenji says, you should attain enlightenment. You should obtain enlightenment before you attain enlightenment. Which is important, to attain enlightenment or to obtain enlightenment before you attain enlightenment? Which is important, to make your effort to save $1 million or to enjoy your life in your effort little by little, even though it is impossible for you to save $1 million. But you can enjoy your everyday life. Which is important for us, to be successful or to find some meaning in our effort to be successful? If you lose, if you do not realize this point, you cannot even practice Zazen. But if you have this point, you will have the pleasure, the true pleasure of life. So that's the end of his talk. And I mean, it's really all about one point, which is what the topic of today is. Just to continue with our practice is our purpose. When we do anything, just to do it should be our purpose. In this way, true emptiness will be realized. That whole talk boils down to that. And it makes, actually, it simplifies everything. When we do anything, our focus is just on the doing of it. And the value is just in the doing of it and nothing else. So then there's no problem. That's basically what Suzuki Roshi is teaching us. When I read these descriptions of practice and consider my own practice, I think I've achieved a state where just to continue with my practice is my purpose. I do think that that is the way I live my life, but I can't avoid noticing how easily I can become disturbed. And is there anything I can do about this or not? And the answer that comes to mind is to learn to be disturbed Buddha graciously. As it is, I'm fighting and judging it. But I know from experience that resistance is not the way. I need to go with the situation and not against it. So how do I go with it? With it means to stay present and curious rather than to fight it and escape it. So it boils down to sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. Sometimes we're sun-faced Buddha and sometimes we're moon-faced Buddha. Sometimes I'm disturbed Buddha and sometimes I'm, you know, calm and gracious Buddha. But there's no difference really. It's all Buddha. It's and Buddha means our true nature. So it's all just being who we actually are, whether it's disturbed or calm. It's who we actually are. So the word Buddha just means true nature, your own original true nature. Suzuki Roshi proposes something that helps, and he calls it bowing. He says that bowing is a very serious practice. You should be prepared to bow even in your last moment, even though it is impossible to get rid of our self-centered desires. We have to do it. Our true nature wants us to. After Zazen, we bow to the floor 9 times. By bowing, we're giving up ourselves. To give up ourselves means to give up our dualistic ideas. We bow to Buddha because we already are Buddha. We become one with Buddha and with everything that exists. This is the true meaning of being. When we forget all of our dualistic ideas, everything becomes our teacher. Everything can be an object of worship. And Suzuki Roshi says, in big mind, everything has the same value. Everything is Buddha. When you are just yourself, you bow to yourself in its true sense, and you are one with everything. And only when you are you yourself in its true sense, can you bow to everything in its true sense. When you cannot do anything except bow, you should do it. This kind of conviction is necessary. Bow with this spirit, and all the precepts, all the teachings are yours, and you will possess everything within your big mind. Roshi says that bowing helps eliminate our self-centered ideas. This is not so easy, so bowing is very, this being getting rid of our self-centered ideas is not so easy. So bowing is very valuable. But the result is not the point, it's the effort that's valuable. So to make the effort to bow is valuable, because it helps us eliminate our self-centered ideas. But to achieve the goal is not the point. It's the effort in the bowing. That's the point. And we just continue to bow, whether we've achieved the goal or not. And I know I've said this a number of times now, that at Aheiji, they only bow 3 times. And Suzuki Roshi asked us to bow 9 times. And why? Because we're Americans and we need it. The American ego, he says, needs it. So he gives us a remedy, which is in our best interest. Each bow expresses one of the 4 Buddhist vows, which are: although sentient beings are innumerable, we vow to save them. Although our evil desires are limitless, we vow to be rid of them. Although the teaching is limitless, we vow to learn it all. Although Buddhism is unattainable, we vow to attain it. And Roshi says, well, if it's unattainable, how can we attain it? But we vow to. That's Buddhism. To think because it is possible we will do it is not Buddhism. Even though it is impossible, we have to do it because our true nature wants us to. It is our inmost desire to get rid of our self-centered ideas. When we make this effort, our inmost desire is appeased and nirvana is there. Before you determine to do it, you have difficulty. But once you start to do it, you have none. Your effort appeases your inmost desire. There is no other way to attain calmness. That's a strong statement. But Suzuki Roshi says that there's no other way to attain calmness than to make an effort to appease our self-centered ideas, to get rid of our self-centered ideas. After you've practiced for a while, you'll realize that it is not possible to make rapid, extraordinary progress. Even though you try hard, the progress you make is always little by little. So there is no need to worry about progress. This is the Soto way of practice. We can either say that we make progress little by little, or that we do not even expect to make progress. Just to be sincere and to make our full effort in each moment is enough. There is no nirvana outside of our practice. That's a really important statement. There's no nirvana outside of our practice. So, or you could read that as outside of our continuous effort to get rid of our self-centered ideas, which means to sit zazen and do bowing. So what I get out of all of this is make everything into a practice. Why not? But without a history of practice, it's hard for people to understand what practice actually is. I've been around Zen practice for so long. Sometimes I get confused why it seems so hard. But most people don't grasp the concept of focusing on the doing of something rather than the result. They resort to old habits and gaining ideas. But Zen is just about the doing of anything, staying with the doing of whatever you're doing. If you're cutting a vegetable, you just cut your vegetable. And you keep cutting your vegetable till you're done, and then you put them in a bowl and steam them or whatever. Roshi furthermore says, if you continue this simple practice every day, you will obtain some wonderful power. Before you attain it, it is something wonderful. But after you attain it, it is nothing special. First, Roshi says how wonderful it is to practice Zazen. Our purpose is just to keep this practice forever. Strictly speaking, for a human being, there is no other practice than this practice. Zen practice is a direct expression of our true nature. That's what he means. There's no other practice than Zazen, actually, for a human being, because that is the direct expression of our true nature, Zazen. When we do it, that is a full-on expression of our true nature, which is what our true nature most deeply desires, that full-on expression of itself. So that's why Roshi says that it's so deeply satisfying. As long as you think, I have to do this, or I must attain something special, you are actually not doing anything. But when there is no gaining idea in what you do, then you do something. In Zazen, what you were doing is not for the sake of anything. You may feel as if you were doing something special, but actually, it is only the expression of your true nature. It is the activity which appeases your inmost desire. If you think you are practicing Zazen for the sake of something, That is not true practice. Roshi says it's a kind of mystery. And that for people who have no experience of enlightenment, enlightenment is something wonderful. But if they attain it, it is nothing. And yet it's not nothing. That is Zazen. If you continue, more and more you will acquire something, nothing special, but something. For the person who has it, it is nothing, and it is something. When Zen is not Zen, nothing exists. When we express our true nature, we are human beings. When we do not know what we are. We are not a human being anymore, but we do exist. If something exists, it has its own true nature, which is Buddha nature. But Dogen says, everything is Buddha nature. When there is no Buddha nature, there is nothing at all. Something apart from Buddha nature is just a delusion. It may exist in your mind, but such things actually do not exist. So to be a, this all boils down to say, to be a human being is to be a Buddha. Buddha nature is just another name for human nature, our true human nature. So even though you do not do anything, you are actually doing something. You are expressing yourself. Your eyes, voice, and demeanor will express. The important thing is to express your true nature in the simplest, most adequate way, and to appreciate it in the smallest existence. So that's Zazen, actually. While you are continuing this practice year after year, your experience will become deeper and deeper, and your experience will cover everything you do in your everyday life. Just remain on your cushion without expecting anything. Then eventually, you will resume your own true nature. That is to say, your own true nature resumes itself. For me, the key line is, if you think you are practicing Zazen for the sake of something, that is not true practice. But you can substitute anything for Zazen here. If you think you are writing for the sake of something, or being a painter for the sake of something, it is not true practice and it leaves tracks. For students, they need to study for the sake of study, not for grades or to be told how wonderful they are. And this is hard to do in a competitive culture, but it's not impossible. Because you study for the sake of study, you do your best. And you wouldn't have done better if you had been thinking about getting a good grade. With so many people's mind on achievement, we're lost in a maze of falseness. Everyone's mind is on what other people think, so no one actually exists. Occasionally, we get a leader who just wants to lead because leading is needed. But if the masses are out of their own integrity, they will not recognize his or her integrity. Would that we had schools with one mandatory period of Zazen a day, starting with kindergarten. If Zazen really is the activity, then it most appeases our true, our inmost nature. We would have a lot less anger and hatred in the world. So here are some of the most important ideas from today, and there's seven of them. First, just to continue with our practice is our purpose. When we do anything, just to do it should be our purpose. In this way, emptiness will be realized. Second, bowing is a very serious practice. You should be prepared to bow even in your last moment. Even though it is impossible to get rid of our self-centered ideas, our desires, we have to do it. Our true nature wants us to. Third, in big mind, everything has the same value. Everything is Buddha. When you are just yourself, you bow to yourself in its true sense, and you are one with everything. Only when you are you yourself in its true sense can you bow to everything in its true sense. And fourth, bowing helps to eliminate our self-centered ideas. This is not so easy, so bowing is very valuable. And the result is not the point, it's the effort that's valuable. And fifth, so long as you think, I have to do this or I must attain something special, you are actually not doing anything. But when there is no gaining idea in what you do, then you do something. And sixth, Dogen says, everything is Buddha nature. When there is no Buddha nature, there is nothing at all. Something apart from Buddha nature is just a delusion. It may exist in your mind, but such things actually do not exist. And finally, seventh, we can say either that we make progress little by little, or that we do not even expect to make progress. Just to be sincere and make our full effort in each moment is enough. There is no nirvana outside of our practice. So here is an idea for your reflection during the week. The most important thing is to express your true nature in the simplest, most adequate way, and to appreciate it in the smallest existence. But Dogen says, everything is Buddha nature. When there is no Buddha nature, there is nothing at all. Something apart from Buddha nature is just a delusion. It may exist in your mind, but such things actually do not exist. And so what I'd like to ask you to think about, first of all, to give an example of you expressing your true nature, what does that look like for you? What does that look like? You expressing your true nature. Secondly, please give an example of you expressing something apart from Buddha nature. This may be something that exists strongly in your mind, but actually does not exist. Do you feel it exists? Do you believe that it exists? Try to be as honest as you can. So the first part is to give an example of you expressing your true nature. And the second is to give an example of you expressing something apart from Buddha nature. Maybe something that exists in your mind, but does not actually exist. And thirdly, it is possible to base one's whole life on something that in reality doesn't exist. Can you describe a situation like that? What would that look like for someone to dedicate their whole life to something that doesn't exist? Well, again, I'd like to ask for questions, and particularly questions about your personal daily practice. And please feel free to ask, you know, anything on your mind that you're not understanding. I'd really like to help you get to a place where you can feel comfortable and feel like you at least, you know, have a grasp of what you're doing. So I'm urging you to ask questions now, please.
Thank you, Gail. So the first one that we got is, should we bow with an empty mind, or should we try to do it with a sincere thought? I have just started bowing multiple times after Zazen. It is difficult to stay focused on expressing gratitude or another sincere thought, and easy to just perform the motions. Should I try to feel or think something while bowing, or should I just bow and let my mind do whatever it does?
I think in the case of bowing, it's fine to just bow and let your mind do whatever it does. I don't think you need to be to kind of drum up a kind of, you know, religiosity or devotion or anything like that. In the West, we associate bowing with bowing to, you know, some divine figure or something like that. And in Zen practice, as Suzuki Roshi made just really clear, it is simply an expression of our true nature. It's an expression itself of our sincerity and of our intention to give over a kind of wrong thinking or delusional thinking. So there's no need to try to like twist your mind into a certain state that appeals to you. You can simply focus on the posture and the changing of your posture as you're bowing. You can be very physical with it and just you know, actually bowing, it's not that easy. And especially if you're doing full prostrations. And so you can just pay attention to, you know, now my knees are on the floor, now my hands are, you know, and then you lift your hands. Not to make it complicated. And especially to remember that it's simply an expression of your sincerity and honoring the Buddha nature in you. It's different from what we've been brought up to think of bowing to a divine figure. It's not that for us. I hope that answers your question. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. Another one that we just got is, I still don't think I understand the expression sun-faced Buddha and moon-faced Buddha.
It's that the idea is to stay with who you are right then. So a lot of us, myself included, we don't like ourselves when we're upset or we're angry or we're feeling mean or whatever. And Suzuki Roshi is saying, you know, that's Buddha also. So Buddha is our true nature. So when we're feeling disturbed, then we're disturbed Buddha. That's all. We're just, I'm disturbed Buddha right now. But putting it that way is, it's more an accurate description of what's going on for you than to just like have a tantrum and throw things around and yell. This way, there's a kind of acceptance, acknowledgement, recognition of your state of mind and willingness to be that. So well, as long as it lasts, and then move on to some other state of mind, because it's just a state of mind. So that's what moon-faced Buddha and sun-faced Buddha means. Sun-faced Buddha is sort of a happy state of mind, and moon-faced Buddha is kind of a sad state of mind. And it's just an expression to exemplify. We just are what we are when we're that, and we don't need to try to be something else. So again, this all boils down to Zen practice is really an expression of our sincerity. It's just an expression of enjoyment of being Buddha nature. You know, that's who we are. And to take pleasure and joy from it, and to be that. And the perfect expression of it is Zazen. But there are many expressions of it, and the expressions of it are whatever you're doing sincerely. I hope that suffices. Thank you.
So, and the follow-up is this the same as what you listen, you just listen, and when you talk, you just talk? So there's talking happening and listening happening, and that is the end of suffering.
Yes, that's, we had that whole talk on that recently. And that's one of Shakyamuni Buddha's main teachings. The end of suffering is simply whatever you're doing, you're just doing that. And today's talk really explained why. Because even if you're doing being angry, then you're just fully being angry. And that's what you're doing, being angry. And it doesn't go any further than that. So you're angry Buddha right then. But you don't have to worry about, am I a bad person? All these things. There's no other worry. There's just acknowledging that right now I'm disturbed Buddha. Right now I'm moon-faced Buddha. That's it. So when I'm listening, and the previous talk, it was about you, when you come to a Dharma talk, what you're the listener. You're the listener. A Dharma talk requires someone talking and someone listening. And so you're the person listening in the Dharma talk, and I'm the person talking in the Dharma talk, and that's all. They're equal value. They're of equal value. Shakyamuni Buddha made that very serious point. There's no difference, because each person is expressing their sincerity and their Buddha nature fully in either of those actions. So they're equal, and they're both entirely meritorious. So all of that's the same. Everything I just said in the last two questions are the same. And it's really the same as the whole talk today. But Shakyamuni Buddha said, this is the end of suffering. Which is a pretty big statement. And I think I've explained why. That there isn't any problem when you just stay with your continuous practice. Because it's just the doing. It's just what I'm doing now, and then the next minute I'm doing it again, and then the next minute I'm doing it again. And then you stay focused on that. I think I'm getting a sense that people are really understanding this. And, you know, you can say, well, it's so easy to understand. But if this is the end of suffering, just imagine. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Gail. The next one that we have is, I seldom hear in these talks references to physical well-being or practice outside of the posture we assume within Zazen. I know there is yoga, but that is not specific to Buddhism. When you were in Tassajara, was there a form of regular exercising?
No, there wasn't when I was there. But I think there might be something now. I thought I heard something about there's a time where you could exercise. I think that the way it might work is there's a bath time every day, and maybe there's a way to, maybe that's been extended or something, and you can exercise and take a bath or something like that. But there wasn't when I was there. You just had to forego that. However, frankly, the schedule is so demanding that I don't know. I really didn't have any more energy to do anything than just follow the schedule. Other people on days off, they took hikes, and so there was some chance. In a Zen monastery, days with a 4 or a 9 in them, like the 14th of June or the 4th of July, are considered days off, which means that there's no work periods. That's all it means. There's no work periods. But when there's would have been a work period, you can go and take a hike. So, and there's not a formal lunch, so that you can get a bag lunch and take off a good portion of the day. So there's, you know, every 5 days, there's a chance to do something physical. Thank you. I think it's a very valid question. And I really, myself personally, wish there were more acknowledgement of the need for exercise. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. The next one we have is, how can we work on not having self-centered ideas?
The best way is to think of yourself as nothing, which is the truth. So I heard this story once where someone was outside of a Zen monastery in a cold climate like Colorado or something, and he was asked by someone else, well, what are they doing in there? And he said, becoming nothing. They're becoming nothing. And there's truth to that. So Zazen is one way. There is a sense of shedding that sense of meanness, or something special about you. In Zen practice, the goal is to meld into everything else. So you're not to be distinguished. That there's nothing you do that stands out. So you do everything along with everyone else. And there's nothing that shows up about you that calls attention to you as opposed to everyone else. It's sort of like being in the court of ballet in a ballet company. You know, the goal is, your leg raises exactly the same height as all the other court of ballet legs. And that's what you have to do. And it can be difficult, but that's the essence of that. And the reason for that is working on becoming nothing, and which is egolessness. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. And the next one that we have is, I've heard Suzuki Roshi say, recite sutras with your ears. Would you explain what he means by that?
I've been watching a documentary on this orchestra conductor who's supposed to be like the most amazing orchestra conductor of the 21st century. He's in his 20s, and he's really quite amazing. His name is Klaus Mäkelä, and he's from Finland. And he says, After all, when people come to rehearsal, when his orchestras, he's the lead conductor of the Paris Philharmonic and the Amsterdam Philharmonic, and he was of the Oslo Philharmonic. And he says, when he comes to rehearse the orchestra is there not to practice their own, you know, I'm an oboe player and you're not there to practice the oboe, you're there to practice the sound that the whole orchestra makes together. So you're listening, you aren't even listening to yourself, you're listening to how to play the oboe in such a way that it does what it needs to do for the whole thing. That's listening, that's sort of like playing the oboe. You could say that's like reciting a sutra with your ears. So you're listening, and even bowing, you can bow with your ears also. You can bow, or even with your eyes, let's say, you're along with everyone else, so that there's this sweep of everyone doing the same thing at the same time. That's what it means. So the consciousness of the whole. So when you're reciting a sutra, your voice doesn't, you know, even if you're a wonderful soprano, you don't let your soprano skills come through at that moment. You chant along with the tone of everyone else's chanting right then. So the idea is to meld in with everyone else in the room. And that's egoless. That's practicing egolessness. That's practicing something else, this larger thing, is more important than me. That's what that means. I don't know if we have, is there a short other question?
Yeah, so there is another one. Another saying that has always confused me in Dogen's praise, think not thinking, what does that mean?
It means that think non-thinking is Dogen's phrase, and it's a conundrum, but it means you're accessing, your mind is in every part of your body, and in every part of your body is Buddha. And so every cell is filled with Buddha. And when you think non-thinking, you're accessing all the cells filled with Buddha in your body. That's non-thinking. And that's actually an explanation of our zazen, of our shikantaza. We just sit accessing every cell, which is a little Buddha world. That's actually how it's thought of in Buddhism, in Zen Buddhism. That every cell in your body is a little world filled with Buddha. Thank you for asking. That's a good question. And I need to end now. And I want to thank everybody, all of you, for being here. I'm so grateful. And those who attend during the week, and my team, Brendan and Brian and Sahar, who do so much work to make these talks possible. And I will see you next week. Bye-bye.